Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 86, Enemy Below. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Too Hot, Scott Michella.
I'm back.
We're both back, and we are ready to discuss what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We've got some game impressions, we've got a little bit of news to talk about, and then we've got our big topic, which is going to be what's next for Switch. Switch has been out for about 2 weeks as we're recording this. Everyone's been playing The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, but of course there's a lot more than that. And so we're going to be discussing the games that are going to be coming out in the next 2 months or so. But speaking of Breath of the Wild, Scott, how are you doing with the game? Are you still enjoying it? How are you progressing through this massive, massive game?
It's crazy. I think I'm enjoying it more every time I pick it up and getting deeper into it. And I find myself, the side quests, I get sidetracked and I'll just go down the rabbit hole and I'll be like, well, I got to get 10 crickets. So I'll spend a half hour like squatting in a field waiting for a cricket to show up so I can take a picture of it. So I can add it to my, spoiler alert, my sensor,
my compendium.
And that way my sensor will go off when I get near a cricket. So now I actually have, by some just sheer luck, I snapped a picture of a cricket, even though he's not even in the picture. The radar thing said it was there. Yeah, it was covered by grass. So those are the kind of things that, I don't know, I think make the game special. I enjoyed squatting in a field for 15, 20 minutes, you know, waiting for my moment to snap a picture of a restless cricket. You know, on my way to a place, you know, you'll see something up on a hill and say, oh, I should check that out. And of course, when you do, it either pays off or it doesn't. But more often than not, there's a payoff.
Yeah, but there's always stuff that you want to go and check out.
Always stuff to do on the way to your next objective. So
absolutely.
I feel like you could spend an hour getting, you know, the equivalent of maybe a quarter mile away just because you're going to, instead of parachuting over, I choose to go on foot just so I don't miss any cool stuff along the way. And I think that's probably how a lot of people are playing. And I think this is a game where I'm just shocked at how little I've played it so far and how much fun I've enjoyed and had out of it. And I've still played like 20 hours and I'm not even a tenth of the way into this game. So, oh my gosh, this is going to be like a 200 hour game for me, it feels like, at least.
Yeah, I'm probably about a third of the way through, I guess, judging by how many shrines I've completed and how many bosses I've defeated and things like that. And yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised I'm that far into the game after about 2 weeks. I thought this would take me way, way longer. But I still expect this is going to be just massive and still going to take me a long time to complete. I mean, I'll bet there are some people who are really diligent who've probably finished the game already. And that's not the way I want to play. I like taking my time. I like taking it slow. I like exploring everything. I'm not doing everything on foot like you are because, you know, those guardians are still freaking me out.
Oh my gosh, the guardians. I don't even know. Don't spoil it for me, but I don't even know how to approach them. So I'm getting my ass kicked whenever I wind up in a place where I shouldn't be.
Yeah, I'm not in a position to tell you because they're just destroying me.
Okay.
I have been able to take one out once, but it was through a lot of persistence and luck.
So I'm just going to be a learning experience for me. I don't even know what time of day I can go out to avoid them. I don't know how to stealthily
get
around. No, I guess not. So,
I mean, there are some that are embedded in the ground that you can like sneak behind them because they won't notice you. They won't turn around.
Yeah.
So there's one that you had to get past to get to this one area. And I was like, man, how am I ever going to do this? I'm like, oh, I just go behind it. It won't notice me. But
they're not that smart.
For the most part, they are sneaky, sneaky, evil, nasty.
Yeah, they can climb. So don't think you're going to get away from them by going up on the higher ground. I've had one chase me up a mountain. So
Nasty.
Yeah, I am loving this game. I can't even compare it to anything. I've never played anything like it, and I think it's a really special game, and I hope this isn't the last Zelda on this console. I hope we get another one in the same vein of this game. I can't imagine how long it took to make a game like this. How long has Nintendo been sitting on this game? That's what I'm wondering.
Actually, did you check out Nintendo's Making of series that they posted on YouTube?
I haven't. I know there's a three-part video series they posted, something from GDC that they did, and explaining their design.
A lot of that same information that was at GDC, that's correct. And you can watch it on the Switch as well.
Oh, you can? That's cool.
You can go to the news channel and check it out that way. And I enjoyed it a lot more watching this making of series on my TV as opposed to on a little YouTube window on my computer. And yes, there is some spoilery stuff in there, but not too much. It's broken into three parts. It's the beginning, the open air concept, and I still think the term open air adventure is ridiculous. And then the story and characters.
What about open air adventure is ridiculous?
Because it's not a thing. It's not a genre. It's an open world adventure. I'm wanting us to coin their own term for it. Huh. You know, you're not flying through the game. Yeah. You're on foot for the most part.
Yeah.
So I find that kind of funny. But anyway, it's really informative. It's really interesting. I wasn't spoiled on too much, but there were definitely areas I haven't been to yet. And I was like, oh, man, that looks so cool. I can't wait to check that out. Mm-hmm. But part of me was like, oh, man, it would have even been better if I'd seen it in the game on my own for the first time. That would have really taken my breath away, no pun intended. But yeah, it's out there. And you know, once people are far enough into the game that they don't have to worry about being spoiled, or maybe they don't care about being spoiled, I definitely recommend checking it out. There's some really interesting stuff in there, especially those crazy concept sketches for Link that were rejected, like happy-go-lucky biker Link and stuff like that. Just ridiculous.
Yeah. Cool. I will definitely check that out. I didn't realize I could watch it on the Switch, which makes me a lot more apt to watch it.
Of course, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is not the only game I've been playing on Switch. I also downloaded Blaster Master Zero when it came out last week, and I've been enjoying that. Scott, have you had a chance to play this one yet?
I haven't, because I'm having so much fun with Zelda, and I picked up another game on the eShop that we'll talk about in a bit that's been occupying my time in between sessions. So I just feel like if I get another game that I'm going to feel like I need to invest time in, I'm going to feel overwhelmed. So I haven't even downloaded it, but I plan to.
Well, I can understand that, but I decided I did need a little bit of a break from Hyrule. As much as I love playing that game when I'm playing it and I can barely turn it off, after I've kind of reached a stopping point, I'm like, whew, boy, wow, I could kind of use a little bit of a break. So it's okay for me to switch over to something else, such as Blaster Master Zero. And let me tell you, that game, it is very much a remake of the original. In fact, the first area of the game is practically identical. At first, I was like, why does this game even exist? Why am I not just playing this on Virtual Console or something? But the more you play, the more you discover it has been altered. It is different. The later levels are altered significantly, and they've modernized the silly story. You know, in the American version of Blaster Master, he goes after his pet frog, but I don't believe that was in the Japanese version.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
But they've kind of combined the stories of the American one and the Japanese one and sort of turned to something that actually makes sense. You are still, you know, going through this mutant-filled wasteland looking for a frog, but they've done an admirable job of trying to make it seem logical and sensible. The game arguably looks better, and I do like the enhanced controls. Like, now you can strafe and you can aim diagonally when you're doing the top-down on-foot stuff.
Yeah.
And that's really helpful. Plus, there are now save points. And that's one of the things about the original, is that it was pretty darn difficult. But the addition of save points makes things a whole lot more user-friendly, I would say.
I always enjoyed the side-scrolling part more than I did the top-down part. Did they?
Yeah, me too.
Did they make improvements to the top-down part to make that enjoyable instead of the slog that it feels like in the original game?
I haven't played the original in such a long time, I couldn't really tell you. But like I said, being able to shoot diagonally and strafe, that helps a whole lot.
So does it play like a twin stick shooter in those overhead modes where the right thumbstick controls where your gun shoots, or how does that work?
No, you just hold down the R button and that will keep you locked in the direction you are currently aiming.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I guess my one complaint about the game is that it does not have pro controller support currently, but they're issuing a patch, and probably by the time this episode airs, I think it will be available and you will be able to use the Switch Pro controller to play this game.
Did you pick up the Switch Pro controller?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got that, and I've been using that almost exclusively.
A lot of people say it's one of the best controllers Nintendo's ever made. I feel a little burned by the Wii U Pro controller, so
I never use my Wii U Pro controller.
Exactly. That's how
I
feel.
This thing I've been getting tons of use
of. Okay, so maybe it's
Well, the Wii U Pro controller didn't offer anything that the gamepad didn't.
Yeah.
So there was really no reason to use it unless, like, I really hate this touchscreen. Yeah, Why do I want a nice, convenient touchscreen on my controller? And it's quite excellent.
Quite excellent, if you can find one. Because I looked on Amazon today, and all I'm seeing is resellers selling it for a pretty high markup, which is unfortunate. So I'll have to wait till they come back in stock.
I guess so. But anyway, back to Blaster Master Zero. I'm not terribly far into it, But so far, it seems like a great follow-up to the original. Does seem to be a little bit easier, but hey, in this day and age, I think that's perfectly welcome. But yeah, really digging it so far.
Cool.
You, on the other hand, have been playing something else that you alluded to earlier. You picked up something in the Arcade Archives series, right?
Yeah, there was no like announcement about when these games were going to hit. There's a bunch of Neo Geo titles came to the Switch.
Right, we knew there was going to be something in this series coming out according to Nintendo's website. And then just, you know, boom, last week we got like six Neo Geo titles all released all at once on the Switch eShop.
Yeah, so the second it hit, I knew exactly what I was going to pick up, which is Metal Slug 3. I love the Metal Slug games. They just, they're just easy. Not, by the way, they're not easy. They're the most difficult side-scrolling platforming shooters that you'll play. It's just very, very hard, you know, crushingly difficult gameplay. Even on easy, I'm playing through easy and it's just kicking my butt.
So do you not have infinite credits?
So you do. You do have infinite credits. So you can.
So you're going to die a lot. You're
going to die a ton,
like,
but you can finish the game in one sitting and it might take you like 20-30 minutes. It's very humbling. So it's not about finishing the game, because you will finish. If you're just plugging credits into the virtual system and just after your game over, you just add a quarter and, you know, start again. So you start off exactly where you died and you can just play the game all the way through, and it feels like a very casual way to play it. I like to avoid dying, but of course it's very difficult in a game this hard. The graphics, oh gosh, it just reminds you how great the graphics of the era were and why it's being parroted constantly in indie games left and right.
Well, yeah, back then, I mean, Neo Geo was like, you know, the top of its class when it came to 2D sprite graphics.
The sprites are just gorgeous. Yeah, you just want to take screenshots of everything, and it's just these giant enemies and beautiful scenery and
bosses.
the bosses and the just the animations of the death scenes, and you turn into a zombie and then like lightning bolts out of the sky and your head pops off and guts spew out and it's very bloody. So
it's cartoony.
It's very cartoony.
It's not rated M or anything.
So
like
what's really great about Metal Slug, and I think it's probably the case with a lot of these games, there are a ton of options that remind me a lot of the Sega 3D classics on
the
3DS.
Cool, that's what I was wondering about, because I haven't picked up any of these yet, but I'm thinking about it, and that's what I was wondering is, you know, what kind of, you know, cool extras and features and options are in there.
So there are difficulty settings, like up to 6 or 7 difficulty settings. I'm playing on like 1 or 2 and it's kicking my butt. So clearly if I go up to 7, I'm in big trouble. You could change the button configuration, which is really nice, because with the Neo Geo ABC, where the buttons fall on the controller, when you want to press jump, you're probably pressing shoot. So I always like to have the jump button be A. And you could use the trigger sticks to fire your weapons, which is really nice. It gives it a different feel. Other options, there are graphics filters, very much like the NES Classic Edition. You can put like a CRT filter on it, make it look like scan lines. You could turn the filter off and get pixel perfect graphics. There are definitely other options. So there are 4 different ways to play. There's like a caravan mode, and I'm not quite sure what that is. There's like a high score mode where it's like a time attack, and I think if you only get one quarter. There's a Japanese mode and an American mode.
That's cool.
What's nice is there's like a 12-page manual in there to explain a lot of the stuff, and there's a bloody mode on and off, so you can turn on the censoring, which I'm guessing all of these features were probably in the actual arcade system.
I would think so.
For the operator to make the decision on, you know, how hard should this game be for the player? How should I turn off blood or leave it on? So I think it's wonderful. If you're interested in playing these Neo Geo games, I bet they're all really fun. I especially enjoy Metal Slug because it's just a way to kick back and relax and unwind and enjoy some just classic arcade gameplay. And there's a 2-player mode, so you can hand Joy-Con over to a friend and you both can take on the crazy zombie alien crabs and all sorts of other. The nice thing about Metal Slug 3 is it's like 8 games in one. There's an alien level, there's like a sea creature wacky, you know, mutant level, there's a zombie level where the first
this
time
is where Metal Slug got really really crazy.
It's completely insane. It's just insanity, and there are great vehicles you can get into. There's tanks, there are submarines, so there's like Harrier jets, so it offers a whole lot. It feels like 8 games in one, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I didn't pick this one up because I've still got the Metal Slug Anthology on Wii, which was pretty darn great. But I had been thinking about picking up NAM 1975 because I do not have that one on any collection or any platform. And it's great to hear that it's like a perfect arcade conversion.
Yeah,
so,
with,
sounds like an awful lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'd love to play it in co-op sometime with you.
With the six titles they released, it feels like they did one from each genre. You know, there's a fighting game, there's a shoot 'em up, there's this Metal Slug game, which is hard to pigeonhole.
It's a run and gun, co-op run and gun. One of the best out there, this side of Contra.
All right, there we go.
The other game I've been playing is actually not on Switch. I went back to the Wii U, and I've been playing more Shantae Half Genie Hero.
Wow, so you dusted off the Wii U.
Yeah, you know, I kind of thought I might be done with it, but no, Shantae has pulled me back in. And the reason for that is because they have implemented a hardcore mode into the game. Yes, while I loved Shantae Half Genie Hero the way that it was, I have to admit it was a little bit on the easy side. But now, if you play hardcore mode, it is suitably tough. I'm only two areas in, and it's not impossible, but you have to be very cautious. There's very little room for mistakes, and it's a lot more challenging. If you don't like that, you still got the regular mode. But I think this is a very nice addition for people who thought it was too easy. So if you had heard that maybe it was too short, too simple, not challenging enough, well, now you have no excuse. Hardcore mode it definitely lives up to its name. And, if that was what was holding you off, just, go out, get it. Still an awesome game, and now it's even better.
Cool. I'm surprised you're still adding to that. So then this was not DLC or anything. It was just a free update.
Yes, it's just a free update. And, if you were a Kickstarter backer, there will be more free updates, but this one is free to everybody.
Great.
And there's still going to be content. There's going to be stuff like the Risky Boots mode, playing as the villain Risky Boots. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be other stuff. And all that stuff's still going to be coming to Wii U, so that is a great reason to keep that system hooked up.
Okay.
And speaking of systems that are not ready to be put into the closet just yet, we actually got another Nintendo announcement of a new Nintendo 3DS game.
What is it? Is this a Nintendo published game that you're about to drop on me?
It is, and it's going to drop very soon. Next week, they have finally announced for North America the third Box Boy game is coming out in the eShop. The title is Bye Bye Box Boy, just like it was in Japan. And we're going to be getting it very, very soon. I've been kind of worried that it wasn't going to be coming out to North America, because when they did their latest financial statements, usually they say, oh, here's our upcoming releases. And normally something like that would have been on there, but it wasn't. So I was kind of thinking, oh, well, we're not getting it over here. But no, it will be out, within a week or so. And once again, you'll be playing as QB, the titular box boy, and you'll be able to create these strings of boxes to solve puzzles in platforming 2D stages. You're going to have new powers like a bomb box, a box rocket that launches you into the air, a warp box to give you some manner of teleportation powers, and a remote box. And I'm not quite sure what that is. But certainly, it sounds like more of the same kind of fun, but amped up, more abilities, more cool stuff to do. And like I said, we'll be getting it very soon.
Yeah, it looks like you can actually dress your box up in this game. Is that something you could do previously?
Yes, there are costumes. There are various costumes. You unlock some of them by just playing through the game and completing challenges and whatnot. There are also some that are gotten through Amiibo.
Oh.
Like you can get Kirby costumes by using the Kirby series Amiibo. Mm-hmm. This game was made by HAL, the same folks that made Kirby, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I see there's a King DDD outfit as well.
Yes, that's right. But speaking of Amiibo, there has been no announcement of the Box Boy QB Amiibo coming out in North America. So we'll be getting the game soon, but apparently that Amiibo is still exclusive to Japan, as far as we know. I mean, maybe, it could still happen, but it seems like if it was going to, it would be coming out now.
Yeah, you'd think they'd want to just sell me a Square.
Like I said, it is the least exciting Amiibo out there.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure there's still a market for it.
Yeah,
so
a square
that's
on a,
kind of bummer.
A square on a pedestal with some RFID capabilities.
Yes. But regardless, I'm still glad that the game is coming out here and definitely looking forward to it.
Cool. Yeah, I think this is one that I'm going to pick up for sure. I'm still carrying my 3DS around with me everywhere I go, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, I've actually been a little standoffish with this series, but the more I see of it, the more interested I am in it, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to pick this one up as well. Why don't we change gears a little bit and check out some listener mail?
Sounds good. Do we have a jingle for that yet?
No, sorry. You could sing one right now if you
want. Nah, I'm going to leave that up to our listeners. If any of you have a listener mail jingle just sitting there in the back of your head that you can't wait to get out, bang it out on a piano or use your beatbox or whatever device you have and send it to us. We'll use it. Yeah.
So, of course, last week we were asking for some comments on Switch and Breath of the Wild, and we did get those. Our first one comes from listener Dark Shuey. He says, loving it so far. I have 16 hours of round-trip flying time from Australia to Singapore coming up, and that will be some great Switch time. Also, being able to lift from the dock when the TV gets commandeered by the kids is priceless. Breath of the Wild has Game of the Year sewn up already for me. I just can't see a more polished and enjoyable game turning up this year.
I think, and it's so early in the year, but I don't know how anyone's going to be able to top this game. If they have a game in the works right now, if there are developers with games in the work, I think they're looking at this game right now with a very keen eye to what they can crib, what can they steal, what can they borrow to make their game measure up to this game now. And oh, it's going to be a challenge for anybody that's releasing a game this year.
Well, never count out Mario. We still got Odyssey on the way.
That's crazy that we're going to get a Mario, an open world Mario in this same year. But I don't see how anyone's going to top this game if it doesn't get Game of the Year from, most of the publishers out there. We're in for a real treat with whatever else is coming down the pipe, because right now it's got it sewn up for me as well. And I hope you have a charger for that flight, or I hope there are some power ports, because I don't think you're going to get more than 3 or 4 hours out of your Switch on that 16-hour flight. Better charge up.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. Our next one comes from Kyle C. He says, I'm loving my Switch so far. I'm pretty impressed with how zippy it is compared to the PS4 and Xbox One. I love how quickly it jumps from docked mode to portable and vice versa. As far as the launch games go, I'm pretty impressed. Most launches, I've only bought one game, but for Switch, I got 4. Zelda, Bomberman, Shovel Knight, and Fast RMX. If we count Blaster Master Zero, that makes 5. All in all, I think it's a pretty awesome piece of hardware.
Yeah, I'm hearing that Fast RMX is one of the best fun racing games to hit any console this year. So if you're into that kind of thing, have you played any of Fast RMX, Chris?
I haven't played Fast RMX, but I did play some of the previous games in the series on previous consoles. Mm-hmm. And, that developer, they really know their stuff. They have some great technology. And so it doesn't surprise me at all to hear that it's an excellent game.
And it's funny that we're mentioning, I think Bomberman would otherwise be like a completely forgotten game. But the fact that we only had, 10, 15 games to choose from with this launch, the fact that Bomberman is on the tip of anyone's tongue is just surprising to me.
Well, it's been a long time since we got a Bomberman game, so I think that fans have really been looking forward to getting a new title in that series and, from Konami in general.
Yeah.
For me, I'm just not really into Bomberman. I tried playing it at the demo event I went to, but hey, if anyone who likes it, I'm certainly not going to fault them for picking it up.
Yeah.
Well, maybe for $50 I might.
There's so many worthwhile games right now on the Switch is surprising, and the fact that most of us are only playing one is kind of sad. So I'm glad that Kyle there picked up a bunch of extra games, but I just don't want to go and buy another game that I know is just going to go unplayed for quite some time. So I'm going to wait till I get enough out of Zelda to pick something else up that might require some time investment.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. When I check my friends list, it's almost exclusively people playing The Legend of Zelda. And then when I see like one person, it's like, oh, look, there's one person who's playing something else. Wow, crazy.
And I'm keeping odd hours, so like I'll turn on my Switch at like 3 a.m. and I'll see in the corner like 3 friends online, and I know like they're out playing Zelda into the wee hours.
Oh yeah,
into the wee Absolutely. Wee hours. Yep.
Or the Switch hours.
Yeah.
Not the wee hours. Get it? Get it? Okay. Terrible. Our next one. I apologize, a little. Our next one comes from listener Joey T. He says, I was able to get my Switch at midnight and was house-sitting for a friend for the weekend. So it was just the Switch, Zelda, and I for 3 days, and boy howdy, was it mind-blowing. The combat and world exploration is so overwhelming, and that's exactly what the series needed. I do agree with the Hoff in that the weapon durability makes me a little too cautious to explore some areas, but maybe that lengthens the game so I can go back with the Master Sword later. My holy crap moment, slight spoiler, was the Divine Beast in the Death Mountain area. I did edit this a bit for content and length, by the way.
Okay.
The only thing I feel isn't blowing me away is the narrative immersion or the motive of the game. I want to explore and discover its secrets, but I'm not driven to get to Hyrule Castle like I was in the other games. The world is just so darn interesting that a so-so story kind of feels sprinkled in rather than an integral part of the game. But don't get me wrong, I'm so enamored with this game, heck, I still can't believe I'm playing a new Zelda game, let alone a new Nintendo console. Happy times for Nintendo fans.
Those are really salient points there.
I understand what he's saying about the narrative.
Yeah.
And that because it's so open and so broad, you can't really have a focused narrative like you could in past games because you don't really know where the player is going. So I think that's kind of a fair trade-off. And that's something that comes up in the making of documentary where they kind of explain how that affected their approach to the story.
Yeah, I think probably just so they could keep themselves sane, like the side quests don't, for the most part that I can tell, really have anything to do with the main quest.
No, that's why they're side quests.
Exactly. But, you know, they don't even make any sort of mention of anything happening in the main quest so that it can happen siloed off and, you know, it's not going to reveal anything that I haven't seen before, but they also wouldn't have to do three different lines of dialogue to take into account where I am progressively in the game.
Maybe.
So
you'll see
sense.
Some side quests and things that are tied to things you've done, like they won't unlock until after you've completed a certain event.
Okay.
So you'll be seeing some of that.
Okay.
But, you know, they did it very smartly. But yeah, I totally understand what he's saying, but still, you know, amazing game, doesn't really detract from it whatsoever.
For me, with the weapons, I'm not too precious about the weapons, so I'll go in a fight guns a-blazing with, like, the most powerful weapon I have, and then it'll shatter halfway through the battle, and I have to equip, like, a level 4, you know, Boko Club or something crappy.
I'm like saving those for some of the tougher boss fights.
Uh-huh.
But now that I've been able to upgrade my inventory, I have more room to save a couple of really good weapons. It's not something I'm worried about so much anymore.
I'm feeling like I'm going to enough dangerous areas that the weapon drops are actually, you know, I don't have a ton of crappy weapons in my arsenal, but you know, I think it makes the game fun and challenging where I realize, oh gosh, I've just broken my 3 decent weapons and now I'm, you know, going to have to really be creative about how I kill off this very powerful monster to get his weapon. And then I find myself taking a step back, crouching, spamming him with bombs or trying to drop a piece of like heavy metal box on top of somebody's head, which mm-hmm. is fun and it forces you to get creative. So I like the fact that I'm having to, I don't know, work around having very little in the way of good weapons for some of my battles.
Our next letter comes from listener Tyler. He says, I have 2 comments regarding things discussed on your last episode. The first is about the red bleed issue Scott was talking about on the Wii U. Just to be clear, this didn't happen to games that were being played on the television. This only happened when a game was being played on the gamepad due to the compression algorithm used in the process of beaming the signal to the device. So yes, that is correct. When Scott brought it up last week, you were just referring to on the gamepad screen.
That's right, on the gamepad. That's right, on the gamepad screen.
So apologies if that was not completely clear. Number 2, regarding the requirement of a new handheld, in other words, a 3DS successor being necessary, I believe Nintendo will release a small form factor device that will run Switch games, and here's why. In February of 2014, while discussing the software shortage on the Wii U, Mr. Iwata, and I'm paraphrasing here, discussed Apple and Android and how the same software is on multiple platforms. And now a direct quote. The point is, Nintendo platforms should be like those 2 examples. Whether we will ultimately need just 1 device will be determined by what consumers demand in the future, and that is not something we know at the moment. However, we are hoping to change and correct the situation in which we develop games for different platforms individually and sometimes disappoint consumers with game shortages as we attempt to move from one platform to another, and we believe that we will be able to deliver tangible results in the future. This quote from Iwata suggests to me that rather than a true 3DS successor, we will get a range of differently sized devices. One thing seems certain from Iwata's comments, though, and that's that Nintendo has integrated everything down to 1 architecture and 1 operating system. Building another one doesn't seem to be in their plans. So to respond to this, yes, it was comments like these that made myself and a lot of other people think that NX, as it was called at the time, mm-hmm. was going to be a hybrid device.
Yeah.
And also, there were separate comments that NX could somehow be considered a platform more than just a single device. And so, yes, I completely agree that a simplified, kid-friendly Switch is very likely in the cards. As far as it being their only platform, well, I guess, you know, Apple has Mac and it has iOS. So, you know, it's not impossible to go the Apple route and still have two distinct systems. And these comments were made a long time ago. Plans can change. Like at one time, Nintendo said, you know, we have no interest in VR, and now it seems they might be considering VR. However, more to Tyler's point, I do think that the more popular the Switch is, the less necessary a second platform becomes. And if things continue to go the way they're going, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there is no 3DS successor that is its own unique platform, at least not anytime in the near future.
That would be sad. I would be sad.
I love the 3DS, and I love what it's doing, but, you know, I can understand where Nintendo is coming from. And, you know, I think right now they're kind of, you know, hedging their bets, keeping 3DS alive and seeing where Switch goes. But, you know, if Switch becomes the dominating force, then there doesn't really seem to be any necessary reason to keep a second operating system alive. Then I can totally see it going that way.
Except more money is better for Nintendo. So I think...
Well, yes, but they will sell you different flavors of Switch instead. So
yeah, I'd be surprised if we didn't get something that bridges the gap between, you know, what the 3DS is and what the Switch is. And it feels like they'll release a device that'll be closer to what the 3DS is than what the Switch is. And maybe it'll have the Switch moniker, and maybe it'll run the same OS, and maybe it'll even run some, the same games. But I feel like there's going to be a lower price device out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what Tyler's saying, and that's what we've been saying for the last couple episodes.
Hopefully with the touchscreen. And I think the Switch...
So I think that's very likely.
The Switch's hardware makes it possible for possibly, you know, like an integrated... touchscreen, a second screen possibly, and you maybe lose the dockability, and then they'd have to not use the Switch name. Mm-hmm. But who knows? We will see. It's exciting. Yep. Exciting times for sure.
Indeed, we'll definitely see what unfolds over the next couple of years. Our next one comes from listener Gabe, and he's got a tip for us. I just wanted to let you know, if you didn't already, that the 20th anniversary and Smash Link Amiibo can give you classic green outfits from Twilight Princess, Ocarina of Time, and Wind Waker, as well as some of the weapons from those games as well. So it's worth scanning them every day. Smash Link also gives you Epona, the best horse in the game.
Oh, really?
And yes, that is true. Yeah, I mentioned the Amiibo last week and said they were, you know, some of the few Amiibo that are actually worth using in game, you know, in my opinion. But yeah, he's totally right. However, these drops are random. You can't just scan in your Wind Waker Link and get the Wind Waker costume. You know, I've tried doing it multiple times, and I finally got, like, the Wind Waker cap, mm-hmm. the Twilight Princess cap, and I got Epona, but most of the rest of the stuff has been eluding me. But the bottom line is, yes, there's actually a good reason to keep using these Amiibos, classic costumes in there, and lots of other, you know, useful, handy stuff.
So you'll scan it, and then it'll give you the possibility of getting one of those drops sometime along your way in the next...
No, you get a treasure chest. Oh, the treasure chest will fall right out of the sky, land in front of you, but what you get in it is somewhat random.
See.
So you might get the... Cap of Twilight, as I believe it's called, or you might just get like 5 fire arrows or something like that. And you can only use those Amiibo once per day.
Can I bring my Switch to your house and we both scan the same Amiibo?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, all right.
And to be honest, if you get a treasure chest and you don't like it, you can just reload your previous save and try it again and you know, try to work the system that
way. Says the man who's been doing that literally every time he scans an Amiibo.
If I did, I would have probably all of the cool hidden stuff by now, but I don't. Okay. But who knows? I might resort to it eventually. Okay, and one more letter. This one comes from listener Johnny P., or as I'm calling him this week, the Department of Corrections. You know, responding to what you said about the Switch straps for the Joy-Cons last week, he says, the Switch straps are universal, and there's a plus and minus on either side. Scott, you're the one who brought this up. I haven't really used the Joy-Con attachments. What's your response to this? Because I did look at them, and I believe he is right. There is a plus and minus on either side. You can't attach the strap to the wrong Joy-Con.
That's right. You can't. You're right. So I hadn't even taken these out of the box because I had just read online that folks were breaking their Joy-Cons by doing it the wrong way. I guess what I should have said was... there is a right and a wrong way to put them on.
Yeah, because you can put them on like upside down, basically. You can slide them in the wrong direction.
If you put it on upside down, you will break something. There is a nub on the Joy-Con, I believe. And I'm not going to do it, so I'm not going to break mine. But if you do force the strap on upside down, which is doable, by the way, I'm looking at it right now, and it's very easy to do. The part with the strap on the bottom, if you try to slide that up towards the top of the Joy-Con, if you're looking at a plus and a minus at the same time, you know you've got it wrong. If you do try to forcefully slide it, then it will go with a little force. But then when you take it off, you've broken something permanently on your Joy-Con, and anytime you go to reattach the Joy-Con to the Switch, there will be a little bit of a jiggle. So
yeah, don't put them on upside down. That would be a mistake. Johnny P then continues specifically to me, saying, "Shame on you, Hoff. I'm not sure returning your Switch to Target is a good idea. I think that the unit would be sent back to Nintendo and then become a refurbished unit. Stores can't put open items back on the shelf. Why not just sell it for the price you paid so it wouldn't count as a returned item?" Just to be clear, I did not return an open Switch back to the store. I wasn't trying to pull any sort of switcheroo. Ha ha ha. Switcheroo. Or it's anything terrible like that. I got my one in the mail that, you know, took, you know, almost a week to arrive, and I immediately took it back to the store. I didn't even take it out of the big cardboard shipping box. I just brought it right back to him and returned it to him and put it back on the shelf. No shady business for me on that point, in case that was not clear. Hopefully it has now gone to a good home, and some youngster looking for a Switch has picked it up and is now enjoying it.
Yeah, hopefully a reseller didn't get that one.
indeed. Anyway, that does it for this week's listener mail. This seems like a good place for us to take an intermission, so let's do that. And then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is what comes next for Switch. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is what's next for Switch. Of course, if you've got Switch, you've probably got Zelda, you've probably got, you know, maybe a handful of other titles, possibly some download titles like Shovel Knight or Blaster Master or these arcade classics, maybe even got 1-2 Switch and Snipper Clips. But of course, we're all, you know, wondering, you know, what should we be playing next? What else are we looking forward to? And so, you know, the answer to this is kind of right in front of us. It is right there if you go into the Switch eShop right now. Wouldn't you say, Scott?
Is it? What does it actually? It says coming soon, but it's Slim Pickens over there, isn't it?
Well, the thing to be excited about right now is the Splatoon 2 test fire.
Oh, is that in the eShop right now?
It is happening next weekend. And yes, you can go and you can download the software for that right now. I downloaded it last night, and you can't do anything with it except go onto the title screen, just rock out to the music, which I did spend quite a bit of time doing. But yeah, you can grab it right now, and you can get ready for the multiplayer test fire experience, which will be the 24th through the 26th. So that's probably the next thing to get super excited about on Switch, is to check that out. So go to the eShop and grab it.
Yeah, that'll be a great gauge for Nintendo on how well their servers will hold up for this game, because obviously a lot more people are going to download this demo than will buy it on day one, I think. So yeah, that will be really, really interesting to hear about. Are you going to play it, Chris? Oh, you must.
I don't know, man. After playing it at the demo session and, you know, kind of getting my butt totally kicked, I am worried that I'm never going to be able to match up with most Splatoon players out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm hoping to do it. That's why I grabbed it, of course. But we'll see how it actually goes. Maybe I'll just go over to a friend's house and watch them play or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've got it, so I'm all ready to go if I get a chance.
Awesome. And that's free.
Yes, absolutely. The next big first-party release, though, is supposed to be coming out on April 28th, and that is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. It adds a bunch of new drivers. It's got the Inkling Girl, Inkling Boy, King Boo, Dry Bones, and Bowser Jr. And it's got a new focus on the multiplayer versus experience. It's got returning Balloon Battle, Bob-omb Blast, Coin Runners, and Shine Thief. And now they're actually, you know, dedicated multiplayer battle arenas, which was the one thing that Mario Kart 8 was missing. Plus, it's got this new Renegade Roundup mode, which, you know, I'm not really sure what it all entails, but you're trying to capture other players and put them into a jail before time runs out. And then, you know, the opposing team is trying to escape the jail. And so, you know, you're escaping and you're capturing all at the same time. And it certainly sounds interesting and could be a fun new mode. It's got 4-player split screen as well as 12-player local or online multiplayer. And obviously it's Mario Kart. So there's a good chance of this being another hit for Nintendo. Yeah, we've talked about this before. Do you think you're going to pick this one up? Because I'm not so sure about it myself, if that new multiplayer stuff and those 5 new characters are enough to make me buy this all over again.
Yeah, I'm never big on the multiplayer modes for Mario Kart. I don't play the Balloon Battle, mostly because I get super motion sick from just fast turning around really quickly and, you know, doing basically what amounts to donuts and I think that's Balloon Battle is pretty much par for the course. You're just be doing donuts trying to reverse course.
Yeah, it's definitely a different play style than just regular racing.
Yeah, so racing is what I'll stick to. That said, I really only played through the, what is it, 100cc? Whatever it was, whatever it allowed, the highest cc it allowed me to do is what I played through on Mario Kart, and then it unlocked like 200cc mode or something.
Yeah,
I didn't play it at the next highest class. So I don't feel like I played Mario Kart 8 enough on the Wii U to feel like I got my money's worth. So I might double down and pick this one up for the Switch. Because it's Mario Kart on the go. You know, Mario Kart 7 is so much fun on the 3DS. And
that's true.
To have that kind of experience again and to be able to hand somebody a Joy-Con and do like split screen on my screen, be it on an airplane, sitting next to a friend or at lunch or wherever, that's something you couldn't do with a 3DS. You know, the other person needed a 3DS as well. So yeah, I think there's enough in this for me. And the fact that the graphics are going to be a bit better, not much better, because it looks, you know, Mario Kart 8 on the Wii U looks really beautiful.
Yeah, that was no slouch.
And now it almost feels like they need to get away from calling it Mario Kart and start calling it like Nintendo Kart or something. What do you think?
Yeah, Super Smash Kart or
yeah.
something.
So yeah, I want to support Nintendo. I want to have a nice version of Mario Kart for this. It probably will be the only Mario Kart we get for that. Do you think? What do you think, Chris? Do you think we'll get a Mario Kart 9 on this system if we get this Mario Kart 8 Deluxe?
Well, it's hard to predict, but I really hope it's not the only one. Obviously, this is something they were able to do fairly quickly, not really putting in any new tracks, mostly relying on last-gen content. I would really, really like to see a brand new Mario Kart game. And the fact that we're getting it so early in the system's life cycle means we'll have plenty of opportunities to get a follow-up that's on Switch. So I can't really predict it, but I'm crossing my fingers that I really hope it happens.
Me too. So yeah, I'm gonna get this. I'm going to get this game.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence, but I think a lot of people are thinking the same way that you are, and I think it's going to be a fine purchase for a lot of Switch owners.
I see. Yeah, I'd say that.
So while that's the next big first-party release, there is a lot of other stuff coming in March and April. This week, possibly by the time that you're listening to this podcast, Binding of Isaac Afterbirth Plus, I think, should be available. That is a fairly popular procedurally generated shooter RPG, rated M, but fairly popular nonetheless. Have you ever gotten into this series?
I haven't, and I don't know what's stopping me, because it's on the 3DS now.
There was a lot of controversy about not coming to Nintendo platforms for a while,
because
but then it finally did.
Yeah, and it is kind of a controversial game. I mean, you're like an aborted fetus.
I don't think I knew that.
And the fact that this is getting a retail release is really cool. So
this is the one with the cool manual, too.
I feel like now that it's retail, I may pick this one up. I don't know why I don't have it on my 3DS yet, because it would be right up my alley. I probably should, but I just, too many other games to play. I will probably pick this up, and if I like it enough on Switch, I may go back and buy it on the 3DS just to have it in 3D.
Well, that's cool. I'd be interested to see what you think. Also, coming soon, though, we've got Snake Pass, which is going to be a downloadable title. It is a physics-based puzzle platform adventure game from the folks at Sumo Digital. And they've done, you know, some really good work, mostly teaming with Sega. I'm familiar with their work that way. I think they did their tennis titles, and I think their Sonic Racing games. So I know they can do good stuff. I hadn't really paid too much attention to this game before, but I've been, you know, watching videos and things and seeing how, first of all, the game looks fantastic. Second, just seeing the way that your Snake character coils around poles and levers and interacts with the environment just seems really, really neat. Plus, it's got a soundtrack by David Wise, the dude from Rare, you know, famous for the Donkey Kong Country series as well as other titles. So this game's actually looking kind of cool to me. It's only going to be $20 coming out on the 28th of March.
Excellent.
Any interest in that one yourself?
No, I watched the video and it's enough of the camera moving for me to avoid it. It looks like it's going to make me sick.
That's unfortunate. And then coming out on the same day, also on March 28th, is Has-Been Heroes. That is the roguelike strategy game that I'd mentioned playing at the demo event a few weeks back. And it was just something I could not get into. It was unfathomable to me, just completely complicated and overly complex.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope it finds its audience, but I know of the two games coming out that day, Snake Pass and Has-Been Heroes, I am definitely going to go for the Snake.
Yeah, I hope the developers become open to publishing like demos of some of these games, because I think,
oh, yeah,
especially with the Switch, where it's like, oh, you know, with the 3DS especially, I feel like demos really sold me on some games I wouldn't have otherwise picked up. So games like Bravely Default that I would never have picked up sight unseen or, you know, game unplayed. But so yeah, a game like Has-Been Heroes, if I get to play a demo and it's got a smooth on-ramp for me, I may be convinced to get it.
Yeah, I think for games like that, a good compelling demo would be a great thing to increase the audience.
Yeah, that or give me a Twitch app on the Switch and I'll be able to watch somebody play it for a half hour and make that decision as well. But I really want it to all happen on the Switch, so make that happen.
Then another indie game that's supposed to be coming out in March is Pocket Rumble. And what I didn't realize is that this one-on-one fighting game actually came out on Steam last year in an early state. And it's been slowly been getting updates ever since then, adding new characters and refinements.
Yeah.
And new features and stuff.
It hasn't even been technically released yet on Steam. It's still like whatever that pre-release early access.
Mm-hmm.
So people who have bought this game have been living through constant updates.
Yeah, they've been basically you know, doing beta testing for the past
exactly.
Year.
But I think that's what you get when you buy an early access game. And if you don't want that, then hey, don't buy early access games. I think a lot of people's hangups with this game in particular on Steam was that the developers haven't updated it for, I don't know, a few months. And that kind of makes them feel like, oh, no one's working on this game anymore. Also, it has an online multiplayer on Steam, but there's not enough people playing it for it to be fun. So there's only like 3 or 4 people in the waiting area when you go to play, at least per the comments on Steam. So I think a platform like Switch will keep that from happening, because you're counting on a lot there. You're counting on people being in front of their computers with this game loaded, sitting in a waiting room to play this game. But I think a system that you can carry with you and on the go, I think you'll be more apt to have people sitting in a lobby waiting to play a game like this, which is can you explain what this game actually is?
Yeah, I think a game like this that is a simplified one-on-one 2D fighter inspired by games from the Neo Geo Pocket Color system. I think having that on a Nintendo handheld system makes a lot more sense than it does having it on PC. So I think if the game's going to find audience, this is probably the way to do it. And you know, even if people have been complaining about the response that I've seen on Steam has been positive. It has an 83% positive response so far. So if there have been problems, it hasn't really stopped people from enjoying the game. And yeah, that final game will be coming out on Steam very soon. It'll be coming out on Switch very soon. It's only going to be $10. And I was a big fan of the Neo Geo Pocket Color and its fighting game. So yeah, I'm looking forward to checking this one out for sure.
Me too. Especially with the fact that Switch has these removable Joy-Cons, I can hand one to a friend. And this is supposed to be a very, very easy to play fighting game.
Two-button fighting game.
Exactly.
Simple moves, it says.
Simple moves.
So yeah, should be pretty cool.
Yep.
Then after that, in April, On the 4th, specifically, we're supposed to be getting LEGO City Undercover. That one was on Wii U, and now it is coming to Switch. And it has been called by a lot of people the best LEGO game that's out there. So are you looking forward to this one? Are you going to give this one a shot by any chance?
No. I've played enough of these LEGO games to know exactly what I'm getting, and they don't really diverge too much from what the basic gist of the game is, which is, you know, run through the area, collect all the LEGO pieces, smash everything, collect more LEGO pieces. It's very easy. It's for children. It's a game for children. I don't know if I'm ever going to enjoy a LEGO game.
Yeah, they've been really hard for me to get into as well. They do seem super simple. There's not a whole lot of challenge going on. The challenge comes from, I guess, discovering and uncovering everything. But if there's one I was going to play, it would probably be this one. Because like I said, it's gotten very high marks. And even some people who, you know, aren't into the LEGO games at all have gone on record saying that you know, this one is head and shoulders above the rest, easily the best one. So, you know, I'm remaining somewhat optimistic about it. You know, maybe if there was a demo to try out, then perhaps I would get hooked. Yeah. But still, it's a fairly major release that people can look forward to if they didn't get it on Wii U, or heck, even if they did.
That game is not attached to, like, Batman or the Marvel universe or anything like that.
Right. It's an original game, so it has a lot more freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, no particular license like that, other than LEGO, of course.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, that one's got some promise. Another title coming in April, an indie game, Mr. Shifty. That one looks pretty neat. It's a top-down action shooter game. With one of the hooks being that you can sort of teleport to where the enemies are and be able to take them out with quick melee moves. Are you looking forward to this one?
I am. This one came out of nowhere during that Nintendo Indies event, and I am really excited for this one. It looks really fun, and the fact that we don't yet have Hotline Miami on the Switch, this will be a good stand-in until we do get Hotline Miami. So, yeah, it looks gorgeous. I really do like the style as top-down, where there's a lot of strategy involved, and it says something like, you know, you can do these one-hit kills, but you have to take your time and strategize. You have to use elements of the environment to block other people's shots and hurt other people. So it requires a lot of strategy and thought, and it's not just run around and just shoot everybody. So yeah, I think I will enjoy this. I'm going to say I'm going to pick it up, but I'll definitely want to see some more gameplay. Who knows? There may be a demo, but I definitely want more than just a trailer to make a purchase decision on.
Well, it definitely sounds interesting. And speaking of top-down action shooter games, you've also got Shakedown Hawaii coming. And, you know, when they had that Nindies event, they said it was coming out in April. I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. I went to their website, and they said that it was going to be coming out sometime in second quarter of 2017. If it does still make April, that's great. But at this point, I'm not counting on it. It looks really cool, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last April release I wanted to mention is Puyo Puyo Tetris, which is supposed to be coming out on April 25th. This was one that I had an opportunity to try out at the demo event recently, but to be honest, I passed on it. The idea of having Puyo Puyo and Tetris combined into one game, I thought, well, wow, that's really interesting. How are you going to do that? But it turns out it doesn't really combine the aspects of Puyo Puyo and Tetris more than it does. It's both games in there, and you can sort of play modes that switch between them. No pun intended.
Yeah, they're side by side.
But that's exactly what it is. You can play Puyo Puyo. You can play Tetris. You can play a competitive mode where you switch back and forth between them, kind of like the old Tetris and Dr. Mario on the Super Nintendo. So it's not quite as you know, groundbreaking or innovating as I was thinking it would be, and that's why I didn't play at this event, because I'm like, oh, well, I know what Puyo Puyo is. I know what Tetris is. I can just watch. No reason to wait in line to play this. But I mean, obviously, those are both great puzzle series, and the game is only going to be $40. It's not a $60 game. So, you know, if you're looking for something to scratch that puzzle itch, that should be a pretty cool one as well.
And so this game's already out in Japan, and because the Switch isn't necessarily region-locked, if you did find a way to get your credit card to work in the Japanese eShop, you could download this right now, although you'd have to learn Japanese to do it.
Well, it's only Puyo Puyo and Tetris, so it's pretty straightforward. But yes, this is true. You could download it by switching to the Japanese region of the eShop right now. Absolutely true. So that's all the stuff that's coming out, you know, sort of in the immediate future. There is, of course, lots of other great stuff on the horizon that we'll be talking about in the months to come. You know, obvious things like Sonic Mania, Ultra Street Fighter 2, ARMS, Splatoon 2, Fire Emblem Warriors, Super Mario Odyssey. But there's also lots more indie stuff. And Scott, I know you're looking forward to a lot of these indie games yourself. So before we wrap this up, you want to just go down some of your most anticipated indie games we'll be getting later this year that don't quite have release dates nailed down?
Yeah, so I've been looking into all the indie games coming to the Switch, and there's a lot more than what was announced in the Nindies event. So, and some of these titles may even surprise you. I'm just going to run.
I'm going to run down
just a handful that I think you may want to play and may want to check out right now, because you can play some of these on Steam and you can watch people play them on, you know, you can watch the Giant Bomb guys play through some of these. Their playthroughs are hilarious. So starting with the most obvious, which is Stardew Valley, and this will probably end up being, for some people, a console seller. People are super psyched for Stardew Valley. I'm a
farming game fan. I play Harvest Moon. I play Story of Seasons. But I've not had a chance to play Stardew Valley. Why are people so excited
about
this game?
That's a good question. So to answer that, I spent my $15 yesterday on Steam and bought Stardew Valley to see what the hype was about and why people are losing their minds over what I've, you know, really snarkily been calling Farmville, RPG Farmville. So I downloaded it. I would say I played it for 3 hours. Now, could I have played it for 12 or 50? I would say yes. It is exactly what I expected, which is this grindy farming game where you're, you know, planting seeds and 4 days later you're harvesting the seeds to sell the crops, to buy more seeds, to harvest more things.
Sounds like a farming game, sure.
But then I had no clue what Stardew Valley was, except that people were talking about how awesome it is and it's life-changing and pulled me out of a six-month depression and blah, blah, blah. And I can see that. I can see that now, because I played after 3 hours. The game starts to open up and becomes a lot more than just a farming game. This is going to sound crazy. If you put Farmville, Breath of the Wild, and Earthbound in a blender, that's what Stardew Valley is. It actually has some crazy stuff happen not too far into the game. Like 3 hours in, some wacky, completely unexpected stuff for me started happening in the game. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But for $15, if you have a PC or a Mac, you can get it on Steam right now. You can see what the hype is about. I think it's probably worth your time if you enjoy these farming games. It's very creative. It's very fun. It actually builds out a whole world. I feel bad for trash talking it for so long now that I've finally played it. Will I continue to play it? No, because it is one of these awfully addictive games like a Farmville. So no, not for me. It's one like Tiny Tower or whatever other myriad, like click the thing, make the thing happen, pay the thing to get the more things to make, to buy more things, to make more things, to sell more things, to buy more things. That is a treadmill that I will not get on, but I completely understand how other people can enjoy those treadmill-y games. So, Stardew Valley.
I do have a question about Stardew Valley. Does it have capybara?
It doesn't. Not as far as I can tell.
Okay. Well, it might not take its place as the best farming game
fishing.
Yet.
There is some fishing.
Definitely.
There's definitely resource collection. There's crafting. I did not see any capybaras, but that's not to say there isn't one.
Okay. Maybe it'll be exclusive to the Switch version. Who knows?
I would say for folks that enjoy games like Harvest Moon, put this on your list. Put this on your list for sure. So, or Stories of Seasons and those games of those ilk.
All right, I will. So what else you got?
So next on this list is a game called Overcooked. It looks hilarious. It's a game that really requires you to be in the same room with another person because there's a lot of communication. Basically, it's a cooking game where you're making recipes and getting the ingredients, making the dish, and then serving it up. And so you're a bunch of cooks in a kitchen and you're all trying to, you know, avoid duplicating each other's efforts, you know, ruining each other's dishes. So it's like, okay, I'll chop the tomatoes while you peel the carrots, and then let's meet at the pot. We'll both put our ingredients in at the same time, and then we'll go back and you prepare the salad and I'll do the meat and that kind of thing. So it's really like short order cook style stuff. It looks absolutely hilarious. I think it requires multiple players. I don't think you can even play single player, so that's one to look out for.
All right, cool. Do enjoy a good cooking game.
Another one that surprised me that I didn't realize was coming to Switch is Enter the Gungeon. This is a really cool twin stick shooter with a bunch of wacky weapons. If you like games like Smash TV, and because I'm such an old person, I can't even think of another game like Smash TV. But Robotron is the original twin stick shooter. If you like those kind of, if you like wacky, like sci-fi, like a gun that turns into, like shoots lasers, or a gun that shoots chickens, this is the kind of game for you. It's bizarre. It's funny. It's fun. The graphics are charming, and I cannot wait for this to come to Switch, especially because we've got the two Joy-Cons, and we can hopefully play multiple people a split screen. I don't know if it will do split screen, but I think it will. I think because on Steam it does do two-player split screen gameplay, so I expect that to be on the Switch
all
as
right.
well.
All right, let's hope so.
Very briefly, Ultimate Chicken Horse, which is coming Q3. So
that sounds crazy.
Ultimate Chicken Horse is bizarre. And I can't even hardly explain it. I think you have to watch a playthrough.
Is it like a chocobo? It's a chocobo bizarre. Sounds like a chicken horse.
So you play. You're playing to become the Ultimate Chicken Horse. Now you might not be a horse or a chicken, but. But you, when you win the level, you're the Ultimate Chicken Horse.
All right, fair enough.
It's a multiplayer game. I don't even think you play the single player very much, like Overcooked. You probably could play it single player, but it'd be a miserable affair. So Ultimate Chicken Horse is a game of sabotage. You're running through these very bizarre levels, and each person gets to place a trap, or a very much like Mario Maker, but you're placing like some piece of sabotage somewhere along the course. Hopefully it'll kill your enemies and not you. You, because you'll know to avoid it. You placed it. So you're placing obstacles and traps, and you're trying to get to a flagpole at the end of the level. And the levels are bananas. Okay. Like, one is a giant wave is coming at you, and you're just trying to avoid the wave and get to the end. But you could step on each other's heads, and you're bouncing over obstacles, and you're watching out for chainsaws and all sorts of other bizarre stuff. Looks really fun. I cannot wait to play this and sabotage my friends and have a blast. If you like games like Towerfall or Nidhogg, this is up there with that kind of fun multiplayer, pick up and play type of thing.
All right, sounds cool.
Very briefly, I wanted to mention Hollow Knight, which looks gorgeous. It's coming 2017 sometime, who knows when, but it looks great. You play as a bug. The graphics are gorgeous, and the gameplay looks like a lot of fun. It's a Metroidvania style game, even though I hate saying that word. And lastly, Jackbox Party Pack 3.
Oh, that's like a trivia drawing party game, right?
Just to have Jackbox on the go is going to be a life-changing thing for me. As long as you have Wi-Fi, the Switch will need to connect to Wi-Fi to be able to play the Jackbox games. If you've played any of the Jackbox games with your friends, you'll know it's perfect, like for a day at the park, or not day at the park, a day at the pub maybe. As long as you have Wi-Fi, it's great. Without Wi-Fi, it's going to fall flat. But the nice thing is your friends can all play from their mobile devices, so you don't need to hand somebody a controller. You can all play off the same screen, and everybody connects their phone to jackbox.tv, enters the little code, and then they join the room, and everybody can play along. And I think you play up to like 8 players for each of these games, so it is a real party game. So yeah, Jackbox, that is going to be huge for me. I am going to love taking my Switch to places and being able to bring Jackbox on people. So yeah. Look for those.
Yeah, that one was not even on my radar, but I'll be sure to keep an eye out on that.
I think that's everything I had on my list that I was really, really excited for. But there are tons more indie games. Just watch that Nindies event to get a small taste of the stuff that is coming. And check out those titles on Steam if you want to see more. A lot of those are already on Steam.
All right, cool. Yeah, hopefully that's giving people some idea of what they can be looking forward to in the next couple months and even beyond. So if you've got your Switch, you're thinking, hey, what am I going to get next? Or maybe you're on the fence saying, oh, there's not that much stuff out for Switch. Well, now you know, there's actually quite a bit coming down the pike. So please look forward to it, as they say. I guess that means it's time to wrap up this week's episode. But before we go, we still have time for, yes, that's right, a dramatic reading. This time, it's from the in-game intro scroll from Castlevania III: Dracula's Curse. During 15th century Europe, there lived a person named Dracula. He practiced sorcery in order to create a bad world filled with evil. he began taking over the continent of Europe, changing countries from good to bad. The good people of Europe tried to fight off Dracula, but no one was able to survive. Finally, the Belmont family was summoned to battle Dracula's vile forces. The Belmont family has a long history of fighting evil. The townspeople became afraid of the Belmont's superhuman power and asked them to leave the country. Fortunately, the people found a mighty Belmont called Trevor. The curse of Dracula has begun. The fate of Europe lies with Trevor.
Oh boy. So this is funny because with age and experience, I now know how this kind of garbage like text wound up in these classic NES games. But you know, the manual for this game had a lot more a lot better writing.
Konami's manuals back in the day were full of humor and snark. Their actual games were full of the
humorless.
Well, they were kind of, you know, just full of the typical awkward translations. Yeah.
They didn't have Google Translate.
It feels like they did.
It almost feels like Google Translate. Oh, I know how these things happen. Is, you know, they got a guy in the office who can kind of speak English, and they hand him what they wanted to say, and he's just like, okay, here's my, I have a third grade ability to translate Japanese to English, so I'm going to use the most simple words, and then I'm going to consult my Japanese to English dictionary for the rest, and that's how this happened.
Yeah, something like that. Regardless, it's still an awesome game.
So it is, but the fact that a classic like Castlevania 3, they had three games to get this right, and they still... You know, I think Castlevania 2 had better writing than Castlevania 3, but clearly they localized that.
Welcome
they
to the Hell House.
They localized that in the U.S. instead of somewhere in Japan.
I don't know, man. You go along and talk to those crazy villagers with their nonsense speak in Castlevania 2, and I don't know. I think you might be singing a different tune, my friend. Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com. You can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And of course, if you like the podcast, we would appreciate it if you gave us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella.
What a horrible night to have a curse.
And the goddess Phosphora.
Yes, you called?
We will see you next time. Letters. We get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters. Letters.